All right. It's 9:30 a.m. on a Friday. The calendar date is July 12, 13. On this tape, you will hear the stories of Eloise James and occasionally the voice of the interviewer, Gretchen Kingsbury. We are taping this interview in Jackson. Eloise, thank you for participating in the Amador County Living History Project. We appreciate your willingness to preserve our county's history by sharing memories. This conversation is being tape recorded, and the tapes will be made available to the public without charge. If you share something during the next hour that you regret saying on tape, we will make every effort to remove it before publication.
Thank you, Gretchen. The names and my history items that I'm presenting this morning start with the beginnings of the James family, Jordan James family, and his work in living as one of the founders of Pine Grove. History accounts of the age of the town and significant entries can be discerned from other readings by the listeners, but I would point attention to the fact that there are presently the remnants of two mine tunnels in Pine Grove. And my history items include the significance of Sydney's, S-I-D-N-E-Y, the Sydney's from 1860 to 1936 as family names. The superintendent of one of the main mines on the north side of Highway 88 was named Cushing, C-U-S-H-I-N-G. And there's the Tellurium Mine superintendent. He had his family, or at least his son with him, who was a friend of Jordan James. That was the first Sydney Cushing. My brother and my father, and probably the father who died in shortly after Sydney James was born, Sydney Edmund James was born in 1892, had a cup, probably a communion cup or a cup that was presented to the baby. A silver, very, very beautiful silver cup about 3 inches high. And it was well tarnished, so you know that it had good quality silver in it. But Sidney Cushing gave this cup to my family. And from that, Sidney Avery was named after Sidney Cushing, and Avery after my grandmother, great-grandmother James's maiden name, Avery. Sidney Edmund was the son of Sidney Avery and Emma G. Sterneman. Her father was a German-Swiss man, and Sidney Edmund's middle name reflects the her maiden name, Edmund, or his Edmund maiden. His name, Edmund, as her maiden name was Sterneman. And Sidney Vincent came along in 1936 as the third living child of Sidney Edmund James. And the only boy in Sidney Edmund's family. He was born on October 29, 1936. And was named Sidney Vincent from the paternal grandmother's teenage daughter's name. And there's some dispute from the Missouri side of the family on whether it should have been Sidney King James. However, he had the name of Clarence King when he and Sarah Hall, or Sarah Stewart, lived in was Clarence Vincent King's wife from Wabash, Indiana. Her sister, Irene, was a school teacher in Antelope School and married my father's uncle, Bill Sterneman. That's significant in the accounts because Clarence Vincent and Sarah and two-year-old Myrtle, their only child, visited Irene's home where she was teaching up at Antioch above Mace Meadow and other meadows like Butterfield Farm. And with that visit, Clarence undertook the vision of making a commercial apple growing place on 9 acres of ranch timberland and the headwaters of South Sutter Creek. The valley was originally owned by C. Bedford, then by Captain Glenn, before my grandfather obtained the mortgage that Captain Glenn's widow had. C. Bedford drops out of the picture, but it was interesting that a man by the same name was later in the 21st century. C. Bedford was also in the sheriff's department in Jackson of Amador County. So you have my grandmother's sister's brother being married to Irene, and he owned part of the Sterneman property that was on the north side of the North McCallum River. Both the two, now we'll skip to the two younger brothers who are not mentioned as much in the previous tape. There were three stepbrothers to my father, and Chester McLean was the oldest. The stepbrothers Lewis and Walter went to school either at Pioneer or where my grandmother Jay McLean then was cooking for the PG&E workers. An interesting sideline was that her mother, after my grandfather died, said, "You stay down there in Stockton and learn a trade." But she didn't. She came back up and became a cook for the PG&E ditch tenders who tended the upper and lower ditches from Tiger Creek area. Lewis had a job when the Salt Spring Dam and Flume were being added to work with the surveyors up east of the present McCallum River. Salt Springs is well known, but we have a picture before the Salt Springs Dam filled with water. Lewis McLean was standing with a surveyor's tripod overlooking toward the east before the dam was built. It shows the depth of the present dam and in fact how it was important to the Miwok Indians. Lewis died of pneumonia in 1930 or early 1931. I didn't know of him. I just knew that Uncle Lewis had a house that was near my grandmother's house. It's in pictures between the our house and my grandmother's house, our house being Jordan James's resurrected house, which he had resurrected from taking down a building and aqueduct, and then my father tore it down and rebuilt the present house that his aunt, Louisiana's sister, Mrs. Sarine, had built next to the present cemetery with the picket fence. So Lewis died of pneumonia, and he's buried in Jackson. Walter, in his early 20s, we have a picture of him in front of our Pine Grove house, with standing holding a huge bobcat that he had trapped. They took a picture of the size of it because it was almost as large as a lion, where he was holding it up by the tail, and it was hanging way down below his knees. The sad ending was typical of many mining tragedies in Amador County over the years. In the early 20s, he was blown up in a mining shaft down from Defender Ridge, where Joyce had his Defender mine. His trainer left him to light the fuse and escaped up the shaft, and Uncle Walter was not as successful, and my grandmother now had lost her first husband and her two youngest sons. She had no other children. Chester lived in Uncle Lewis's house after he married Hattie McLean and before they moved out to their home east of Ranch Hall. Incidentally, it's called Ranch Hall because there was a softball field there that the young softball players of the 1920s and 30s played softball there. That was a hike from McCallaby River over down toward Volcano, east of where Aqueduct was and is. That's the funeral of Walters was my earliest recollection of the funerals at the Daenerys funeral home in Jackson. The 1902 account of assayed gold from the Frederick Joyce description of his father's records on the Defender Mine say that there were many shafts leading from Defender Mine to the north fork of the McCallaby River. That's not exactly part of my family history, but it's where the mail was gathered because there was no post office at Pioneer Station. There was only a dance hall and a store from 2 acres that Ron Kimball got. The miner's record describes that those shafts could be dug into and sloped down to get toward the McCallaby River and thus keep the mine going. But the records are about 9 pages, and they describe where the water was hit and how good the assayed record of the gold and silver were found in those shafts. The first shaft was abandoned by the Joyces after Mr. Joyce's oldest son did not jump correctly into the skip that carried him back up to the surface and fell off and was drowned and killed in that mine. The area there was mined by Mexicans and in a place called Contreras. My brother knows more history about the fights of the Irish and the Mexicans and South Americans in that area, who evidently the Contreras Mexicans lost out because they did not heard of them much more. Mary Ha, who people nowadays know her family as McGuirks. Andy McGuirk was the 8th generation that Noreen told me had lived in Amador County. So they figure back much more than most of our people up country. Noreen McGuirk still lives in Jackson, and she and I recall the old Turk. Now, I'm making this morning especially to include things that are not included in other histories, oral or written. And I don't know of anyone who's looked up the old Turk. To my older sister and me during the 30s, as well as Noreen, who is about, and her sister and brother were older than we, we used to see the Turk wandering up and down present Highway 88, long beard, large thick lips, and sort of bugged eyes looking out. He'd been around when my grandmother was still cooking at the Schoenbrough place, which is now where the present Pine Grove group is, across from the upcountry cemetery. And the old Turk, when he would visit my grandmother's to eat, would say, "Is it clean?" That insulted my grandmother. But now, knowing how people in other cultures like clean food as well and water as well as we do, it was not surprising. But the old Turk lived up behind the present site of the mill that was on Mr. Harker's property, or maybe the Schoenbrough. I've not determined that. But he just disappeared from the picture. But I found out that when he was around here with my grandmother and other people, he probably was part of the Armenian Turkish battle. So we called him the Old Turk, but he was probably the Old Armenian because his name was Sam Garabedian. IAN would signify that he came from the area that was subjugated by the Turks into Turkey. Jim Lake was a man who went off to the South Seas, but he left behind his old touring car. And I guess it was the first used car lot in Pine Grove, maybe the only one. But he left that behind my grandmother's chicken yard, which was right next to the cemetery fence with the Prospect Street going between. So when I was growing up, I used to get my driving practice of sitting behind his old rusty steering wheel and driving away to wherever I thought I should go. So we played driver in Jim Lake. We never heard of him again, although there's a Lake Street named up in the McKenzie subdivision of near Buckhorn. Another road in Amador County was the Dust Bowl Exodus. In the early 1940s, they came when the Winton and the other lumber companies made an amalgamation of three to be the present logging road for, it was planned before World War II, Pearl Harbor, but the impetus came, and they've actually paved the road through Pine Grove. And they paved the roads, and I have a picture of my mother insisted my brother and I stand on the sawed down pine stumps that were about 4 feet up, and that was the beginning of the highway cut that cut away what we called the Butterfield Hill, went around the mountain like all of the roads did, and went straight through the cut, and it's now called Buckhorn Hill, simply because it runs down from Buckhorn down to Mace Meadow area and to the farm of Butterfield. I thought at one time it was Butterfield Stages, but it was not. The 17, the telephone line was developed and got impetus when the Smiths and the other people who were the ancestors of the present owner, Sharon Lundgren, and her formerly, the whole family owned it until they passed away, or left the area. But the 17 parties on the one telephone line with the telephone wooden poles going through the pasture land of the meadow that my grandfather King bought. The 17 parties on our telephone line included the people for the PG&E construction building of the hydroelectric tunnel from Tiger Creek down to the present dam, which they call the West Point Dam, and also it's a tunnel connected to the Tiger Creek to Newark and with the big hydroelectric towers, transmission towers that went in 1929. And 17 parties on the telephone line were men talking about their construction business. No cell phones, no other twittering and other, let alone other ways to talk faster. They tied up the phone line. Our Pine Grove telephone number was two longs and two shorts. I was standing in my grandmother's living room when my mother received word from where she had died in Sacramento in the Sutter General Hospital. And I recall the sadness, of course, that my mother had with her mother being with her the first 39 years of the 20th century. The going back to the from the PG&E to the log trucks with these improved highways, they had improved the Nathan Williams Speedway from the old Independent Trail to the 13 curves that we know now. But if you look over, you can see three different distinct cuts, both there and in the one that goes down to Aqueduct from the top of the hill there about east of Pine Grove. Grandpa King drove his 16 wagon to the Kennedy Mine with pine logs to repair the asphalt repairs. People stressed the fact that mules were usually used, but Grandpa had lovely horses and told my gifted and talented students in the late 1980s. They asked the gifted and students been down in students in Sutter Creek, asked my mother, who was by then bedridden, cared for 24 hours a day, about the different names of the horses and what they were good for. So she told one amusing thing, that two horses always played hopscotch. They were very knowledgeable, Percheron and other sure-footed, wide-legged-footed horses. And they would jump over the traces and the other gear that connected the man who was steering the horses, so the lines would not get tangled up when they had to make a turn. Our most famous picture that we kids grew up with was what we called the big turn, because Grandpa was standing there. I later have a picture of us that was driving his horses down while we were standing taking the picture. I have a later picture where the last of the mountain men had their wagon train going down 88 before they were relegated to a lesser trafficked road. He drove his wagon down one day, and he left them at the one of the livery stables in Jackson, and he took his own feed for the horses because it cost too much money to pet that stable. Then he drove back the next day and continued his preparation of the 500 apple trees on the 9 acres that he had. Party times in Pine Grove included a horse, too. They had some of the young, late teenagers, early 20 peoples, put a horse in the town hall. So Shades of the Temperance Hall, it turned into a Halloween party joke for some of Roscoe Walker and some of the other people. Pine Grove figured a lot in Carol Galley's and Iris Madrell's and Valtha Jones, and as well as our older sisters, in school oratorical contests where we earned prizes for memorizing a Civil War orator and their views of political views. And so that was my first introduction to real public speaking. When I decided to work overseas, and first in Pakistan teaching expatriate children, Carol Galley invited her friends, my friends and hers, to hear her pediatrician from Sacramento describe the land of the Pashtuns. In the late night, so I learned long on of the slick paper propaganda that all cultures or countries, if you prefer, would put out for the world to hear their point of view. I'm glad I never put those in my trunks because my trunks were very thoroughly searched by the Pakistanis and my life would never have been the same. Now, this man who distributed that was just a name. His name was Shaw. So now I can conclude that he was named Shaw for good reason. He was a Pashtun. But 30 years later, his widow came back to bury him in his home. She'd never been in Kabul, Afghanistan, but she had to bury him because he had been ostensibly shot by a deranged patient of his in Sacramento. But the blood feuds go on for hundreds of years. They say if you give up, if you wait too long after 100 years. And I was very interested in that bit of history, and I really am grateful for this opportunity to talk about peoples. And yesterday, July 2013, I was the guest of Joe and Iris Aparicio, who previously, Iris was in third grade, and I was in fourth, and Lois Berry's and her husband, Jim Lober, from New York and lately of Boston, were going to school together. We had a lovely dinner and reminisced about many things, but Iris and Joe have been very, very loyal to Amador County. They moved back here sooner than I did in 1982. But her sisters, Charlotte and Marjorie, always had great part in the social life of us young people. Now, this is centered mainly on 1931, and I was away for 30 years, so you'll have to find your history of how things really became what they are in 2013 from someone else. But I'd like to remind people in closing of my valedictory speech, June 6, 1949. There were 49 of us, 49ers. Went to different parts of the world, many to Sacramento, like Carol and Joe Aparicio being professors at American River College. But my valedictory speech and my original research brought me a poem that I described starting out talking about the divide that we stand on. And I had the Elephant's Back and Round Top, both of which I've climbed over my life, looking over to the east and over to the west. And in the end of the poem, that I would not have been invited to say in the present day situation of the wisdom of public education. Say not the days are evil. Who's to blame? Stand up and speak out and boldly in God's name. We can live as a community like we have here in the foothills, but we still have roots that we're proud of and we continue to refine. Thank you, Gretchen, and history.
Well, thank you, Eloise, for valuable information.